Hey, good morning. Welcome into In Focus News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples. We got a very special feature here today. We are going to have a community conversation on race relations. Very timely topic, of course, with all that's going on in the news and around the world. And we organized this kind of quickly here this week, and we're so appreciative to all of our guests that are joining me here today. We're doing a Zoom call, actually. I think this is the first time this has ever been done on In Focus. So you guys are setting some, making some history here on KMAN. So let's go ahead and introduce all of our guests here today. I'll start with Kevin Bryant. He is the co-chair of the Manhattan Martin Luther King Jr. Committee. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Brandon. And it's a good day to be a Manhattanite.
Well, we're pleased to have you on. Rachel Shivers, I understand, is your secretary, and she joins us as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Javelle Roan, local minister here at the Manhattan, which church is it, Javelle?
Manhattan Christian Fellowship Church. We're right on, right off 4th and Points, 328 Points Avenue.
Okay. And Lorenzo Lockett, professor at K-State, and forgive me, what's your title there?
I'm an assistant professor of social work. Really, my representation is as co-chair of Community Conversation and Race Relations, and co-chair of Coalition for Equal Justice. So I'm not really representing K-State.
Okay, well, we sure appreciate.
And I'm also, this is Javelle, I'm also one of the committee members for the Juneteenth celebration.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you to everyone for being here. This is truly a good conversation to have. You know, we hear it all the time. They say this all the time, that we need to have these conversations. And so that's what we decided to do here today on KMAN is sit down, have a 30-minute conversation about race relations here. And, you know, and really, I want to get your guys' opinion, first off, on what the last 2 weeks have taught you about where we're at as a society when it comes to understanding our cultural differences. And I might have you identify yourself as you speak.
Yeah, I guess I'll start. Go ahead, Lorenzo.
Okay, I'll go ahead. One of the main things that I've talked to people from different walks of life is that some people don't know what to do, especially white people. They want to do something. They feel inadequate in some cases. They feel defensive in some cases. Their heart's in the right places, but they don't know what to do. On the other hand, when I look at the demonstrations and things that are going on, they are there. So there's something going on in the white community that's really concerned about these disparities and injustices. And I think it's up to us to try to help them find their way.
All right.
Oh, yeah, I have to concur with Lorenzo there. Kevin Bryant with Manhattan MLK. We have seen a chance for us to sit back and look at change our perspectives based on what we can see through the media. And then if you look at what the media has brought out to us and the numbers that it's brought out to us, it shows that even during pandemic that there's a disparity in races and it's still prevalent in America.
This is Javelle, just a local pastor minister. I can say that I felt a flood of emotions. I know that, as a leader, you always have to be mindful of your emotions, because you have to think about people's lives, the safety of others. You have to think about your own ability to make decisions. And I took a step back to really assess, like, what's going on? Like, what is happening? And I'm like, we're quarantined, you know, the coronavirus is going on. And, you know, to see, you know, things like Ahmaud Arbery running down the street, being gunned down, you know, to continuously see a police officer with his knee on a man's neck, with his hands in his pocket, looking straight at the camera. I still, believe it or not, I've still not watched that video. I just refused to watch it, but it was just propagated over every, I mean, I couldn't even turn the channel without my daughters asking me, what's going on here, Dad? Why are things on fire? Why, you know, is this because of the coronavirus? And and all these different things. And so as a father, I'm processing just, you know, communicating this. And then as a Black Christian man, I'm thinking to myself, well, what does God have to say about this? You know, so there were several tensions and several thoughts that were going through my mind. And then lastly, I'll say throughout that process, you know, I just began to really think about what does this mean, you know, and so for me, that's kind of you know the gist of how I was feeling and what I was going through. I actually talked to a doctor. I'm not going to talk too much longer, but I talked to a doctor. I talked to a friend. I'll say that, and she said, you know, the symptoms of what people are experiencing, this tiredness, this loss of sleep, this, you know, upset stomach, you know, the random crying, the flood of emotions, the anxiety, the loss of sleep. These are signs of war, almost. These are signs of PTSD. And it's a traumatic experience. Now, I can't diagnose it as PTSD, but I will say that the symptoms are very similar. And that's not to say, you know, when you say a word like war, I'm not inciting any of that. What I'm saying is Americans have experienced something that you would see in a war zone over and over and over and over again with these brutal slayings and I would say modern day lynchings. And for me, I think all Americans are waking up and saying, wait a minute, something is not right. This is a human rights issue. And so as a believer, I believe in the sanctity of life. And so those are, I try to concise it, but gosh, those are my emotions and those are my ideas. And so.
Oh, that's powerful.
Thank you for sharing that, Javelle. This is Rachel. And, I think how I've been experiencing the last 2 weeks is heavily influenced by the fact that I am an adoptive mom to two Black boys who are now young men. They're 21 and 18. And I relate very much to what Javelle was saying about these images and several closely timed experiences of the, you know, unjust murdering and public murdering of Black people has definitely brought up a lot of my own anxiety and traumatic experiences that I've had as a mom of Black kids. And I will say that I also see a shift happening with lots and lots of white friends and families or just acquaintances where I once, as a white person, was very insulated from these experiences, almost to the point that I was completely protected from even knowing that these experiences exist for Black people in our communities. And over the last 12 years, I've had experience after experience after experience that has, you know, rudely awakened me to the fact that the experience of living in a white body in our country and the experience of living in a Black body in our country are two very different things, even in communities that are progressive and accepting. And so what I'm seeing in my white friends and family right now is that it's starting to break through that insulation that our whiteness has given us is being broken down because of social media and because of witnessing these lynchings, as Javelle called them and accurately called them. And we're witnessing that as a whole country together, and it is really creating a bigger response than what I've seen before over, you know, the last decade that I've been aware of these things.
Yeah, well, and I think so many of us don't realize that racism exists in so many different places in our society, different facets of it. We may not think of it as racism, especially white people. They might may not think of certain things as racism. But I want to get some perspective on racism that each of you have encountered from a white person that may not be seen as racism by a white person.
Okay, I'll start again with that question. And that's a very intriguing question. People see what they see and then they don't see what they don't see. And one of the places that I see people exercising racist ideals are in politics and religion. And it's amazing to me, the latter one, religion, that people who hear and see things from those lenses, they explain it away. Christians explain it away. People from all walks of the political spectrum explain it away. The Republicans, when it don't favors them, explain it away. The Democrats, when they don't favor them, explain it away. The religious people, that's not my problem. We don't want to get involved. We don't want to be political. It's like you have people in your church that look like the people who have been bastardized out there, and you're not going to say anything? You said and you preached to say, when the shepherd sees the one in pain, he leaves the 99 and go and take care of the one. He don't abandon the 99. The 99 is still under his care. But he sees that one, and the African-American community is the one. And all these good believing people don't want to make them that focus. And that kind of gets into the next question. But
there you go.
Yep. You know, it's
go ahead, Lord. Go ahead.
This is JaVale. I'll just say, and I'm gonna be really short. I'm not gonna highlight issues that have personally happened to me. There are a ton. I think a lot of us have stories. I'll say that as a Christian, I know the history of Christianity, and I know the history of Bible institutes, and I know kind of how things were placed together. And Dr. Tony Evans, who I personally know, was one of the first Black men on the radio. And we brought him here to Kansas State years ago when I was maybe junior here in college at Kansas State. And I remember he asked if I needed a recommendation letter to Dallas Theological Seminary. And I said to him, well, let me think about it. Not knowing that he was the first one to graduate from Dallas Theological Seminary, first Black PhD student to graduate from Dallas Theological Seminary. Because they just didn't accept African-Americans. And so, you know, you have this story being told, and I can agree with that, even through religion to people. And as a Christian, as one who's saying, well, I'm reading this and I'm getting an understanding, I think it's important that now it's not just a Black-white issue. Now it's a global issue. And now true Christians are saying, you know what? This is just right. And we're coming together. And even last night, we had a conversation that was live on Facebook about understanding race reconciliation. And some really good friends of mine who won't mind me saying their name, Josh and Sarah Siders, we sat down. They're the pastors of the Well Church. And we had a great conversation about what this looks like.
I sit on several boards, and our MML. MLK committee does is all about bringing back, you know, what the past is so we don't repeat it. But, you know, what I've heard from people that I've talked to, I mean, that people have spoken at these events and rallies is that especially the people of color, say they've been in positions and where they've been the sole person there for decades. We have people who remain silent because they want to set an example. It's obvious how slow it's moving. It's reflected in our leadership, especially when we talk about politics. We look at I know the city commission race was like, who's represented in this community? It doesn't reflect the government. County commissioners don't reflect the government. the city commissioners don't reflect government. We don't reflect race. I mean, minorities don't reflect any portion of what we see here, and we're, and it's not right because we're just out there. You know, we're surviving too. We're not thriving. So we're in a, you can obviously see the survival movement when you look at some of the statistics, when you're talking about health in Raleigh County, you're talking about incarcerations in Raleigh County for like offenses. It's still underlined, and I'm glad that this is I mean, I think there's a positive thing coming out of this, that we're opening up and seeing that institutional racism is very real. Just look at the leadership. You just look at the leadership in our institutions and organizations.
Kevin, I might just follow up with a question on that. How do we bridge the gap so we can get and encourage more minorities to have some leadership positions here, like on the city commission, county commission?
You know that's a good question. We're pushing. There's groups pushing. Coalition for Equal Justice, MAPJ does that. Also, the Citizen Advisory Board. They all say the same thing, and even the NFL struggles with that. But you know, it's all talking about it's getting people away from that like, especially when you're talking about institutions of trust, the people who they associate with tend to go along with them. If you look at the law enforcement history in Manhattan and in Pottawatomie County, you'll see some pretty good intermingling there. So it's about breaking the code. We just have to keep pushing. And hopefully this push will be harder to break the code.
I see Rachel with her hand up real quick. You want to talk?
Javel, did you want to chime in on that?
I'll just say I'm very optimistic about Manhattan. I am so optimistic about Manhattan. I'm so serious. I listen, and I turned my TV off. My TV's been off for like maybe 2 weeks now. But I'll say that protests are the dramatization of what's happening culturally. And to see the first protest from Saturday go from 200 people to, I heard WIBW say, well over 2,000 people. And so to me, Manhattan is saying something. You know, that's a significant number. So I'll.
There you go.
Thank you guys for sharing those perspectives. This is Rachel again. I think I wanted to wrap back around to that question of, you know, specific experiences that white people might not see as racist or biased that are things that I've witnessed in our community. And I won't tell these stories at full length, but I do think that it is worth noting some things just for self-awareness for white people. There have been many experiences that I've had with my boys that I've experienced firsthand because a lot of times people don't recognize that I'm their mom. So this could be anything from being at City Park, and when one of my sons was 14 years old and he's on the monkey bars, I'm sitting off in a, you know, under the shade and watching my 3-year-old play. But I see the other white moms go find their little babies and their toddlers and preschoolers and look at my 14-year-old as if he's a threat and look to bring their children to safety to get them closer to them. And that's, you know, something called implicit bias. I believe I probably would have done the same thing had I not been a mom of Black kids, because our brains are trained by our culture to see Black people as a potential threat. And it's something that we do a lot of times without recognizing it, but it does have a very real consequence for people, Black and brown people in our communities. Other quick examples would be at our neighborhood pool. You know, you're supposed to be a member of the neighborhood, but yeah, we don't all know each other necessarily or recognize each other. And so, you know, really kind, wonderful people have asked my kids, you know, right in front of me, like, who are you here with? And I don't hear the white kids that I'm unfamiliar with getting asked, like, do you really belong here? And again, that's one of those implicit bias things. You see a Black person and as a white person, your brain may be trained to think like, what is that person up to? And maybe I should check that out, kind of a thing. And another example of that would be with on graduation day, when my oldest graduated from MATC, he and his younger brother were driving to the gas station, quick little drive. They're kind of swerving around, yelling out the window, just, you know, excited and celebratory. But by the time they were back at our house, the cops had been called by someone in our neighborhood to say that, you know, they had been recklessly driving. And, you know, I hear all the older people in the neighborhood complain a lot about other teenagers as well, like, who are white, who are driving too fast or this or that, but the cops aren't being called. And, you know, that was a really traumatic experience for my boys and for our family to have normal celebratory teenage behavior be seen as possibly something that was criminal.
You know, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Lorenzo.
Let's speak briefly to the question you asked Kevin about leadership structure and what can be done about that. In addition to the committees that we are having going on that he mentioned, I want to make a shout out to a political person that is doing something about it, Mayor Reddy. She's recruiting African-Americans and people from different minority backgrounds. She is mentoring them. She is supporting them. And she is recommending what we're talking about are structural issues. If we want African-Americans and other minorities to get involved in that, we must train them up, give them opportunities to succeed and be there by their side to help them understand the language, the nuances, and the culture of politics and leadership. Not that we're ignorant, we just haven't been given the chance like other folks have. Thank you.
I'm not going to get through all my questions here today, but because we won't have enough time, but I'm going to move on and just have each of you maybe define these different words and phrases here. And there's Black Lives Matter, white privilege, systemic racism. If each of you want to tackle one of those, just kind of give me a definition of what that means to you. We'll start with Black Lives Matter.
Javel,
you want to tackle that?
Hey, this is Pastor Ron. You know, I for a while, my wife and I, we had a really good conversation on understanding race reconciliation last night. I keep telling people to go back and check that out. It's under Manhattan Christian Fellowship Church page. It's also under the Well page, because this is a partnering event, a predominantly white church with a predominantly Black church partnering together, just really leading the way on the conversation of race. And, you know, my friend last night, one of the pastors said, well, I'll let someone else speak to it. I'll speak to Black Lives Matter. It is obvious that that all lives matter. You know, I'm a Christian. I believe in the sanctity of human life, no matter what a person has done. And I know people may not even agree with that statement. I believe in the sanctity of life. I believe in protecting people's life. I believe in I believe in life from the time of conception until the time that God will call someone home. And I believe that we're all God's children. And I'm gonna be honest with you. I do believe in the message that all lives matter. However, I started to notice that there were some undertones related to that. When you would speak and say things, well, Black Lives Matter. No, Blue Lives Matter. And there was this kind of elitist, you know, you're changing the narrative. And it's like, I don't have a problem saying Blue Lives Matter. I don't have a problem saying All Lives Matter. But why do we have a problem saying Black Lives Matter? And that's a heart issue. You know, you can't change a heart issue with legislation. And although that needs to happen, it happens with conversations. It happens with standing up and speaking out. To be honest, there's several Bible stories about the woman who was caught in the act of adultery. She was guilty, but Jesus Christ still stood up and said, "He that's without sin, let him cast the first stone." That's true justice, and that's mercy, even when a person is guilty. And I think about, you know, just the sanctity of human life. We've all sinned. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. However, we're looking at this specific people. Lorenzo said, Jesus will leave the 99 for the one. And I think right now we're focusing on the one because we're seeing it time and time again, this one. And that's why people are saying, hey, you know what? Black Lives Matter. We're tired of this. I'm tired. We're all tired. And we're all God's children. And that's the premise of my walk, my faith walk.
There you go. Rachel, I'm sure you could tell us about systemic justice. I mean, white privilege, excuse me.
No, I think you're muted, Rachel.
I'm sorry. Yes, sure. I can speak on white privilege. I want to just follow up on what Javel said so eloquently, that when we see that there's no consequences for the killing of Black lives, that's a statement saying that those Black lives don't really matter. They're not valued the same way that white lives are mattered in our criminal justice system and that sort of thing. So Black Lives Matter, in addition to all of the things that he was saying, is trying to highlight that right now Black lives are undervalued or not valued, and that that's the shift that needs to change. As far as white privilege, I think I'll just summarize it by reflecting back on what I said earlier about being insulated from these incidences. I think white privilege is moving through the world without these issues needing to matter to you, because they haven't happened to you. They're not affecting you, your family, the people that you love. And so it's your privilege to disengage from them and to not listen to the voices that are talking about them, because they don't feel real to you.
All right. We got about a minute left here. Lorenzo, can you summarize it pretty quickly on systemic racism?
Yes. Number one, acknowledgement. If we're going to fix it or try to fix it, we must acknowledge that it exists. Look at the statistics. Don't just look at the statistics in every area that you look at that's marginal or desultory. You'll find us there, Black people there. Look at the statistics. Then make an investment. You first acknowledge, then you got to put some action into what you see. The statistics are not lying to us. This is my pitch to systemic racism. If you're going to fix it, I think where the fix will come down the road is those 6 to 10 year old white male and female kids. If they come up the way this generation has, it's going to perpetuate itself. If we don't tell them the true history, look at the numbers, look at the stories, acknowledge what we've done as a country on all sides, but particularly the predominant side who writes the laws, who structure everything, need to look at the structure, acknowledge that the structure is wrong and ineffective.
All right. Well, we have to end it there. I'm sorry we have to stop, but we're out of time. We will have another one of these conversations. We'll get together sometime real soon. Thank you to all of my guests, Javel Roan, Kevin Bryant, Rachel Shivers, Lorenzo Lockett. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.